They paved paradise and put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot.
This is 103.1 at 12:30 a.m. on your dial, and you're listening to WBLQ and WBLQ.net, where we stream live. This is Westerly's favorite radio station, coming to you live from the Graysale Studios. Isn't that right, DJ?
It is, because it's your local radio station.
That's right. And this is the Resiliency Radio Hour. I know you've been waiting all week for this, right?
You know, some people do. They love this show.
Oh, thank you.
They love this show here.
Well, it's because we have great guests like the ones we have today. We are featuring Mark Doherty and Erica Liebling from the Westerly Land Trust for their every 6 week update on what doing at the Land Trust. Welcome, you guys. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having us, as always.
Thank you.
It's so, I mean, honestly, I woke up with a smile on my face knowing that I was going to see the two of you this morning. It's just like, yes, all this other stuff is going on in my life that isn't so much fun, but this is fun.
We're going to spring it up, that's for sure.
We're going to spring it up. We're going to talk about all the great stuff that is blooming, all the great stuff that is happening at Westerly Land Trust. I have to say, when I looked at the event schedule, I don't know who's in charge of that, but people, you need to go to the website and check out all of the events that are coming up. And I think Erica is going to run through some of them, and then we'll be breaking some of them down a little further to talk about why they matter. Now, first and foremost, the thing that really caught my eye was you have a herpetologist coming on. Like, when
tomorrow.
Is he coming? Friday, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Tell us about the herpetologist. That's somebody who studies snakes and reptiles, people, in case you don't know that term.
Yeah. So Scott Buchanan is the state herpetologist with the Rhode Island Department of Environmental Management. And he has been conducting surveys of some rare and endangered reptiles on our properties and across the state. And he's just a great guy. Awesome. Spadefoot toads, spotted turtles. These are some of these, you know, endemic species that we're trying to protect. And he's got the information and he's got the gusto to get out in the field and get out into some difficult places. I'll say when I first met him was at the Rhode Island Natural History Survey BioBlitz they put on every summer. This year, it's the first week of June. I would give a shout out to them that this is a really awesome event to meet amateur, local naturalists and professionals alike, get
Sounds
together
great.
24 hours, blitz a property, find out as many living species as you can. So Scott was one of the professionals participating, and we went out at night eye shining for frogs, and it was so much fun. I was tired from a day looking at plants, and that sounds, you know, really grueling. Yeah. And we were out in the middle of the night for hours and hours and hours. And I said, when was this going to stop? But there's a childlike energy to looking for frogs and turtles and snakes.
Absolutely. Yeah. What could be more fun? I you know, I don't love snakes. I mean, they startle me when I see them, but I definitely like them and I appreciate the role they play in our ecosystem. Can we talk a little bit about why snakes
are important? Let me tell you something about snakes that I learned from Mark Doherty, who loves snakes and reptiles, unlike I do. I do not.
I like reptiles up until snakes.
Wait.
There's a hierarchy. Well,
yeah,
I didn't realize.
We're going to get into that.
I'm good with all of it except for, I don't know, snakes are
take the legs off and
sweet.
You're done?
I don't like anything without legs. I don't like worms either. But I love worms. You know, they
what
compost,
about whales and dolphins? They don't have legs.
They have flippers, though.
Oh, okay.
That's fine.
They have residual bones.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Some snakes have residual legs as well.
That's crazy.
Maybe I would.
So now
like
I've
that.
Learned two things about snakes from Mark Doherty. The first being that they have a smell that they release.
A musk from their cloaca, yes.
Really?
Gross.
Yeah. It is gross.
He keeps trying to get me to smell a snake, and I am not. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. I'm totally sniffing a snake.
Yes.
Well, I do know that sometimes if a snake is being kept in a cage, like my cousin had a corn snake for years and years, and it definitely had an odor. Mm. It was. Yeah.
Don't like copperheads smell like cucumber melon?
I haven't heard that before.
No.
I haven't been close enough.
I think Bath and Body Works has a new scent.
Yeah. Copperhead snake.
Yeah, no, I feel like I've learned that hiking through the woods, probably in Girl Scouts, that if you smell cucumber melon, probably go the other way, find your group and alert them. Say that you smelled cucumber melon in the woods.
So don't wear cucumber melon lotion when you're
not.
Out. Okay,
yeah.
Got
or
it.
Or do and freak out hikers if they also know this tidbit.
Yeah. Now, is this true of all snakes, Mark?
I can't say for a fact, but I know that our common eastern garter snake, which is the most common snake in the lower 48, I think it's in every state in the lower 48.
Really?
Yeah, incredibly varied in how it looks too. I mean, there are so many subspecies of the snake, but when threatened,
it's a defense mechanism.
It's a defense mechanism, yeah, to release this musk. To say, I probably don't taste good.
So you don't want to. So they're like little danger noodle skunks?
Yeah, they are. Exactly. Exactly.
Danger noodle, I'd forgotten that. Yeah. I'd forgotten that expression. That's so great. But they perform a very important function in our ecosystem. Would you care to talk about that, Mr. Doherty?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they are a predator and a prey item at the same time, right? Right. So they do a lot to keep, think of like our white-footed mice, voles, small insects even. They're controlling that population,
right,
and then also providing a food source for birds, owls. Let's see,
all the raptors.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm sure.
Dogs,
mink and all weasels and fishers too. You know, they're a food source for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, very critical.
Not that I want to encourage fisher cat production in this state, having lost numerous cats to the fishers in our area. And, you know, when I was growing up, I grew up in Rhode Island, right? So we didn't have those when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. They began coming down here, I guess, because of pressure on their environment in northern states, because they were a more northern species,
I think also, you know, there was a legacy from the fur trapping as well, that probably they got pushed north originally into the more remote areas because of pressure in the more populated areas from trapping.
Right.
And I think now, as we you know, there was less of a commercial fur market now. There's still recreational trapping of them, but I think that's allowed them to filter back in. Just yesterday, listened to a great podcast that I've shared with my coworkers before, but it's called The Wild with Chris Morgan, and it's out of Seattle. Seattle radio station. Highly recommend. Beautiful narrative pieces, kind of like NPR style, in the field, the sounds and sights. And he was over in Ireland talking about the red squirrel. So in America, we have lots of different squirrels. We have red squirrels, gray squirrels, ground squirrels, flying squirrels. I mean, that's just the beginning.
They all live in my house, just so you know.
Yes, yes. We are very familiar. And so actually, the red squirrel is becoming endangered in the British Isles and Ireland. And because it didn't have, because of two things, an invasive, the gray squirrel, our gray squirrel, was introduced over there and kind of bullied the red squirrel. And then also their pine martens, very similar animal to a fisher cat, occupies the same niche, was trapped, you know, nearly to extinction. So, but as the pine marten has returned, it's controlled the gray squirrel population because the gray squirrel doesn't have a fear of the pine marten like the red squirrel does, because they co-evolved. So it's knocked back the gray squirrel population and actually allowed the red squirrel to rebound, even though it does prey on the red squirrel too. You think, oh, another predator is another threat to the animal, but
there's more squirrel meat to be had with the introduction of the gray squirrel, right?
Oh yeah, yeah, you don't have to tell me that, that's so. For sure.
Mark sampled a few.
Yeah.
Oh, really? You've sampled some squirrel?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think they're definitely a lesser enjoyed game species, but in southeastern America, I mean, there's a long tradition of squirrel hunting. And
sure.
And,
well, yeah. Kentucky burgoo, right? That's a squirrel, possum, and some other game meat stew.
Oh, a stew. Wow.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? It's a braise, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely on the it's like a chicken, but a little bit tougher, I would say, for sure. Lends itself to slow cooking.
Right.
Mark threatens to make us squirrel tacos at work sometimes, and it hasn't happened yet.
It hasn't happened yet.
Or to our knowledge, anyway.
I don't like all the attention.
Well, I do know also that in the South, there was a rash of what we call mad cow disease, Jacob Creutzfeldt syndrome, which is, or bovine spongiform encephalopathy. And that, pretty good, right?
Yeah.
That's because I wrote a book about meat, so
nice.
I know all about meat.
Nice.
But anyway, that people were getting that in those regions where they eat squirrel because they were eating the squirrel brains, which were considered mm-hmm. a great delicacy. There was a very interesting article in the New Yorker magazine. This is probably 10, 15 years ago now. But it was all about how many people in that particular region were coming up with Jacob Creutzfeldt. And nobody could figure out why until somebody made the connection with wow. the squirrel meat, with wow. squirrel brains.
It's so they're really just a vector for the mad cow.
They're a vector for that, yeah. Okay. And wow. I don't know why they get it, right. Because it's very similar to what sheep get called scrappy,
yeah.
But it's not quite the same thing. And we don't eat sheep brains generally, mm-hmm. but we were eating cow brains. And of course, once it gets into a cow's body, then mm-hmm. it was being transferred
and it doesn't,
by a hamburger.
It doesn't hurt the squirrels.
No,
they don't exhibit.
They
don't they're just
die,
a carrier.
Die from
okay.
it. No, but we do.
Wow.
And cows do.
Yeah. So that back to the Ireland case with the red squirrel, the gray squirrel, and the pine marten. Like many invasive species, including humans moving across the world, the gray squirrel brought with them. I don't remember a disease as well that mm-hmm. that was like a double whammy on the red squirrel.
Wow. Yeah. Fascinating.
Yeah.
Absolutely fascinating. All right, Erica, what's next?
Well,
you have a lot of kid stuff going on, too.
We do have
Let's
a lot of
kids.
Okay, sure. So we are concluding our living laboratories. Can you believe that summer is almost here?
No, I can't.
I mean, we're right around the corner. So we are in the last session of our spring semester of living laboratories, which Mark can speak to if you want
yeah.
to jump in
so
here.
So Living Laboratories is our after-school program that we offer to all Westerly K through 4 schools. It's great. We run it during school and then also in the summertime.
Great.
Shout out to you talked about our events and how we have so much going on.
Yeah.
Big shout out to Lauren Barber, our conservations programs manager, who and Emma Stahl, also our TerraCorps service member for the year. And I think next year, too, she's yeah. going to be helping us out. So we just wrapped up a stream team down at Massatuxet Brook. We were teaching the kids about water quality and how to measure stream flow. And that's been really fun. Programs this summer, we'll get them gardening and
excellent.
Yeah.
And you can register for all of those the upcoming summer programs now. So if you go into our website, westerlylandtrust.org, and you can look under youth and education, which is under Connect and Enjoy, and check that out because there's a lot of fun stuff coming up. It's an eight week series.
Wow.
At Barlow Nature Preserve, which is at 449 Westerly Bradford Road. Our office is our home base. And yeah, lots going on for Westerly public schools, K through fourth graders. Mm-hmm. So
what
yeah.
an opportunity. And you know, I was thinking like when I looked at this and I thought, I mean, I have to look at the South Kingstown Land Trust, but I don't think they're doing as much youth engagement.
Well,
and how do you build your next generation
right.
of people who are going to support the Land Trust and its mission without educating children first?
Exactly.
It's super important.
And that's how we see it is, you know, we're cultivating the next generation mm-hmm. of conservationists. Our education program is something that sets us apart from other land trusts, but it's something that we definitely value. We think that the community values it. They're showing us that by having really great attendance rates. And it's a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we have all been, Mark, I, Emma, Lauren, and Jen, even our executive director, Jennifer Fusco, have been out on the land with these kids. There was one day when we had a field trip of like 60 kids come to Barlow.
Wow.
And we split it all up. I was leading a hike, so I was just doing loops all day, but it was always something different. We were educating the kids about bees, so important. We
birds.
Have birds. Yeah, not the birds and the bees, but separately. And
that's important.
That's
too,
different.
But not
yes,
at the
very important.
Trust.
Different. On that property as well, we have two agricultural operations up and running: Frontier Farm and Echo Rock Flowers. So one is produce, one is cut flowers. And it's awesome for the kids to get out there and see, this is where my food is coming from. Mm-hmm. Or the flowers that, you know, I see on my dining room table at home were grown right here. And they can really get a firsthand glimpse. I think I grew up in Houston. My food came from a grocery store.
Yes.
You know, but understanding from an early age that your food is picked, you know, grown, picked by a human.
Yeah,
and transported to the grocery store, or you go to the farmer's market or the farm stand or whatever. And I think it's just really cool to make that connection.
Absolutely.
Your food is growing in that dirt.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. which is why soil science is so important.
Yeah.
I'm so encouraged by how many kids, my daughter being 26 or so, but a lot of her peer group went into environmental sciences as their major.
It seems very popular right now, which is great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have to take a short break for a sponsor drop. We'll be right back with the Westerly Land Trust, Erica Liebling and Mark Doherty. Stay tuned.
We took all the trees and put them in a tree museum, and charged the people a dollar and a half to see them. Your number one buying destination, Central Auto Group.
When is a car not a car? When it turns into a driveway. That's what we're doing here at Central Auto Group, home of Mazda, Hyundai, Volkswagen, and pre-owned in the month of April. So spring into action and put the dream car into your driveway. Mazda CX-30s, Hyundai Tucson's, Volkswagen Tiguan's, just to name a few. Plus, Central has more cars in stock for immediate delivery. Drive a little and save a lot. If you want to sell your car, Central will pay you cash. Regardless of your credit, Central Auto Group works the hardest to get you approved. Shop 24/7 at CentralAutoGroupCT.com. Exit 28 off I-395 in Plainfield.
All roads lead to Central, your number one buying destination. Central Auto Group.
Don's Corners Market, with fresh cut meats and a butcher on the premises. Celebrating 31 years of business serving you. For owners Tony and Cheryl Spino, their main focus is their customers. Don's Corners Market offers catering, groceries, gift cards, fresh foods, takeout, and weekly specials. Don's Corners Market offers a wide selection of sandwiches and wraps, freshly made soups and salads, and daily hot lunch and dinner specials, as well as their famous fried chicken. Always fresh, always affordable. Don'sCornersMarket.com. 401-322-1660. Dunn's Corners Market, 5 Langworthy Road, Westerly, Rhode Island.
When you hear commercials for insurance, you generally hear something like, 10 minutes could save you $100. My name is Dave Woodmansey from Woodmansey Insurance, and I would like you to know that the same $100 you saved in 10 minutes today could cost you thousands of dollars down the road. If your present insurance company did not take the time to properly gather your information and design an insurance package tailored to fit your needs, you may experience severe shortages or gaps in your coverage in the unfortunate event of a loss. And many of you have never had an insurance loss before and don't know what to expect. As a Woodmansey Insurance customer, you can take comfort in the fact that we understand what you are going through and will be there to guide you through the claim process. Our knowledgeable staff will answer your questions, provide advice, and fight for your rights when it comes time for your claim to be settled. For a review of your current coverage needs for your home, auto, business, or life insurance, you can stop in and see us at Woodmansey Insurance. We are located at 1122 Main Street in Wyoming, 539-7000.
Jeep Celebration event continues at Valenti Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram with 2.9% financing for 60 months on all new 2022 Jeep Compass 4x4s and save $1,500 off MSRP. Lease a new 2023 Jeep Wrangler Willys 4xe for only $399 a month. Save over $12,500 off MSRP. Go to BobWilly.com. Thank you and just smile.
Hi, this is Donna and Desi from the wine store on Franklin Street in Westerly. If it's a new wine you're looking for, we're happy to introduce you to Ocean Road Sauvignon Blanc from Southern Australia. A great match with fresh seafood and only $10.99 a bottle. It's a great value. A new red wine favorite we're offering is Cabriola, a Spanish red blend. This red will pair nicely with your favorite beef dishes. Another great value at $16.99 per bottle. Both are also great sipping wines. As always, we offer a 10% discount on all of our 750 cases. You can mix or match any 12 bottles and get the 10% discount. Remember, for great personal service and super selections, shop the wine store. We're at 86 Franklin Street, right next door to TJ Maxx and Home Depot. Look for the giant wine bottle.
We are Highway and City. It's April and Whaling City is the place to be. Ready to hit the road and enjoy the warmer weather? Then Whaling City Ford Mazda in New London, Connecticut has great news for you. We are bursting at the seams with inventory, new Fords and new Mazdas. And we need to make room for a new location. Whaling City Mazda is building a state-of-the-art facility right across the street at the old Aero Paper location. So we need to clear out the inventory. That means you're saving money. New and pre-owned vehicles ready for immediate delivery. Hundreds of cars and trucks in stock. Starting at $59.95. Leases starting only at $199 a month. Don't let credit stop you from buying your next vehicle. Whaling City has the best financing options. We have many banks to choose from. Whaling City has the right option for you. Whaling City has some of the best service technicians in the area. We service all makes and models. 860-443-CITY. MyWhalingCity.com. On the corner of Broad and Coleman. Have we met yet?
We are Highway and A City.
WBLQ Local Weather.
Hi everyone, I'm Mark Rosenthal. Here's what's happening on this Thursday. Lots of clouds, some sun. There could be pop-up showers. It'll be mostly in the 50s. Clearing and cool overnight, lows about 40. Tomorrow, beautiful day with sun, 56 to 64. Then we pay the price. It's rainy, windy, cool. Saturday in the mid-40s. Drizzle on Sunday turns into rain before dark with an increasing east and southeast wind. Rain could be heavy at times Sunday night into Monday morning, so be prepared for that. That's your WBLQ local weather forecast. I'm Mark Rosenthal.
WBLQ.
Hey, farmer, farmer, put away your DDT. I don't care about spots on my apples. Leave me the birds and the bees.
This is the Resiliency Radio Hour. I'm your host, Katie Kiefer. Did I say that before? I don't think I did. I was just so excited about announcing our Westerly Land Trust guest. I forgot to say who I am. Not that you really need to know. My brain, Gina Fuller, a district manager of the Southern Rhode Island Conservation District, is woefully absent today. But that's okay because we have Mark and Erica. But this is a production of the Southern Rhode Island Conservation District, and we are big supporters of the Westerly Land Trust. And that's why we have this nice little partnership going so that my friends here can come on every 6 weeks and talk about the fabulous doings in your local land trust. So anyway, we were talking about some of the amazing events that you guys have coming up. We covered the herpetologist who will be in residence tomorrow.
Yep, and you can sign up for that one still. Great. There are, I believe, some spots. So again, that's just on our website. You can go to westerlylandtrust.org.
And
that's
on Friday evening at 5:30.
At Barlow.
Yep.
Nature Preserve.
Yep.
Oh, wow. I might try to go to that. Yeah. And then, so we were going to lead this section of the show with the Bumblebee ID event, which is another thing that's coming up in the next couple weeks, right?
Yeah, that's on Saturday, actually.
Oh,
yeah,
that's Saturday.
So back to back, no
even...
rest for the wicked. Yeah. Yeah. So on Saturday, so we have a really great partnership. I mean, so we've talked a little bit about, there's some, you know, as the Land Trust, we started as just a land conservation organization. And, you know, as we acquired more land, we realized there's more of an opportunity to engage our community with the land, whether it's, you know, trails, after school programs, or connecting scientists to the land. And so the Bumblebee ID Walk has been a great output of a developing partnership with Providence College's Pollinator Lab. Dr. Rachel Benoen, who's become a great friend of mine and ours. And on Saturday, it'll be our second annual Bumblebee ID Walk. So this time of year, queen bumblebees that overwintered in the leaf litter are emerging and are searching for a nest, a place to build a home and lay their eggs that were fertilized back in the fall, and begin a new population. So if you want to talk about other things, you know, management of keeping some leaf litter and untouched areas in the fall and winter is really essential because the bumblebee populations really, really depend on these queens successfully surviving the winter, right, and laying their eggs in the spring.
And that leads us to the no mow May concept. Why don't we dovetail that?
Oh,
right,
I got you.
This?
Sure does.
Right?
Sure does.
I don't mow.
Yeah.
I don't either.
Ever.
So the No Mo May is a movement that's kind of gained some traction over the past few years. And the idea is to leave habitat and flowers for pollinators in the springtime when they're emerging from their winter slumber and are really need some food.
Yeah.
And really need to start the year off right.
Right.
Just like the bumblebees, need to start the year off right and to get the populations up. The same is true of other pollinators. They
sure.
need that food source to start
how
the year
many
off right.
Different, how many, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but how many different species of bumblebees are we talking about? If we're having a bumblebee ID event,
yeah.
obviously there's more than one.
Yeah, there's, I don't know exactly how many species of bumblebees we have, but there are three real common species of bumblebees, and they're really fun to identify, actually. You'd think that I always thought that insect identification is impossible, and I've never really given it a chance, right? Uh-huh. But these bumblebees, once you get good, the Pollinator Lab actually made an amazing little trifold handout for us. If you want a copy, you can come down and visit us at Barlow Nature Preserve, and we would more than happily give you one. But basically, on the abdomen, which is the last segment of the body of the bumblebee, there are bands. You know, you might have noticed that before in any kind of hymenoptera.
Oh, hey.
Yeah. And so the pattern of the coloring of the bands, you know, might have a yellow band and all black bands. That's, I don't know what that would be, but that's one of them if you go and look in the pamphlet. I'm still learning myself. So,
yeah.
And so on Saturday, we'll be going out in the afternoon. This is weather dependent. So the queens, if it's cool, windy, rainy, they're going to be bedded down somewhere,
right.
Not out searching for a nest. But on a nice day, when that warm sun, that warm early spring sun comes out, they're going to be out cruising the ground, you know, cruising close to the ground, searching for a nest. It's like a coarse grid search behavior that they're doing. So we can actually go out there with a small net and catch these, place them in a vial, and identify them by looking at the banding on the abdomen.
Right. And then you can keep track of those populations and whether they decline
yes.
or expand.
Yes.
I found a dead bumblebee on my back steps the other day.
Mm.
And this is not the first time I have seen that. And I'm always curious, like, what has happened? Is that a queen who has failed to find sufficient food? I have a lot of flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my garden is already, my phlox is already doing its thing, the creeping phlox. Like, I have stuff that they can feed
mm-hmm.
on, and I don't pull my dandelions.
Mm-hmm.
And also, to add to your question, does it have anything to do with the fact that they sprayed for mosquitoes the other day?
Mm-hmm.
And pesticides in general.
Yeah.
Right. That's what I always wonder. Is it the pesticide? Because I don't use any pesticides.
But they can travel for miles.
Yes.
So if your neighbor's neighbor,
mm-hmm.
you know, uses pesticides.
And that seems entirely possible mm-hmm. given who some of my neighbors are.
Yeah. And I think that this
Sadly.
Is something that we're, like, talk about the No Mo May movement. I think there have been certain niche scientists who have been studying this for a long time, and maybe they've been sounding the alarm, but we don't really know. And I think now collectively we're all waking up to the importance that pollinators play, not just in the natural environment and greater general biodiversity, but also like our food supply too.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know if people realize that they actually take hives of pollinator bees of various species, I suppose, and they transport them all around the Midwest to fertilize those big row crops.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
I mean, we really no pollen, no bees, no food, people.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's really a critical issue. That's why the yeah. colony collapse disorder that you kept hearing about a few years ago was such a major issue, because
right.
it was having an impact on the food supply.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's we are all one great big interconnected web, everybody.
We certainly
That's
are.
Very true.
If there's one takeaway from any of this. Yeah.
yeah.
We laugh, but it's true.
It's really true.
Yeah. But
yeah.
both are true at the same time. We are all one, but we also are each living our own life. And it's kind of the great paradigm of life, I think, is that.
Absolutely.
And I feel like that statement deserves this.
Wait.
Okay. Mm. Yeah.
You're next. I think going back to No Mo May, one thing to recognize is that No Mo May is going to look different for each individual landowner.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just impossible to let your lawn go completely crazy.
No, nope, it's not.
Sometimes you do it year
well,
round.
She lives in the woods, so
yeah.
no one cares.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But obviously there are some standards that the town holds, of course. Things like that. So we're not saying run out and throw your lawnmower away, sell it at
yeah.
Johnny Cake or whatever it is.
But the town doesn't have any standards on meadows.
Yeah.
So there.
I think it's subjective. You know, it really is. It really is subjective. But there are targeted ways, you know, to both show that what you're doing is intentional. And we at the Land Trust, at Westwood Land Trust, we're experimenting. We're figuring out what works. Also, if you have a perfect lawn with minimal weeds and all grass, mowing it or not, it's not going to make a difference because there's no weeds in there with flowers that are going to feed the pollinators.
No
so
clover, yeah, no dandelions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So maybe if you want to participate and support, it's not just about letting your grasses grow. You can do so in an effective manner. If you have a particularly weedy section already, let that section go while your green patches, you can mow regularly. I think it's we have to find it's not all or nothing. You know, we're managing for the pollinators, but we're also managing for the society that we built, and for your kids to have a nice space in the yard to play, and
But I think there are definitely things you can do, like to plan for this. Like if you are to create your own pollinator garden in your yard, that maybe a section of your yard in the future becomes something that you let kind of go wild, but is still aesthetically pleasing, and maybe just a little bit different than everything else.
Uh-huh. Right. So, I love those pollinator garden things.
I know.
There's somebody in Snug Harbor who has an absolutely gorgeous one, but they do have to be revived every year or 2 years. We actually had a guest on who talked about that. But I want to give a shout out right now to somebody. I don't know this person, but I drive past their lawn every day. Okay. They're in Pawcatuck. They have a really sweet little house right on the road there.
Is it Route 1? On Route 1?
Yes.
Right across from Green?
I think so. And she has all tulips and daffodils.
I know exactly.
She has thousands of tulips and daffodils, which are all blooming now. Yes. And she, when they're all done, she eventually cuts them down. But and then in the fall, summer and fall, she has enormous sunflowers. I don't know this person, but your lawn makes my heart sing every time I walk past.
I have rolled down my window to tell her that.
Nice.
It is beautiful. It's right across from Greenhaven, I think, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's
so great.
It's not, you can't miss it if you're driving on Route 1. That's a fact. Yeah.
So if you're listening out there, thank you
I'm
for
saying,
what you're
if
doing.
If you're listening, call in. I will give you a free duck for the Pawcatuck Duckeries and a Springfest ticket.
All right.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's wonderful. Yeah.
That's cool.
So what's our next? Oh, I know. The next thing I wanted to talk about, and again, this is all part of the whole sort of springing into spring, is you have a migratory bird count coming up. That's in a couple of weeks, I think.
May 13th.
May 13th.
Yep. It's an early one, early in the morning, 6:30 a.m.
That's when the
early bird gets the
word. Oh, there we go. Right, all right.
Ba-dum-bum.
Yeah. But it's true. Actually, and it was 7:30 last year, but we bumped it back an hour early. We're challenging everybody. You don't have to be a real birder, but if you're interested, I'm telling you, come out. We have some experts that'll be joining us and who can identify birds by ear, which is really the way to do it.
Yes.
It's something that I've been working on. It's incredibly difficult, but it's really rewarding when you do get things right. So this is something that we've been doing for 3 or 4 years now.
Yeah, a number of years.
And we everybody goes out with an expert to a different preserve, and we're seeing who's around. And actually, doing this is fun, and it's great to educate people, but we also are holding on to this data so we can look year to year. Okay, maybe the timing of what warblers have arrived has changed, or we're not seeing this bird that we used to see all the time.
And what's the word for that, Mark?
Oh, phenology.
There you go.
Would be the seasonal changes and things.
We're going with the multisyllabics.
Yeah.
Today,
so
all the ologies.
Well, phenology. Phenology is not a bird specific term. It's just kind of the. I wish that I could remember that guy's great definition, but seasonal changes, she edited it out of my writing, but that's okay. If you look in our spring newsletter, there'll be a little blurb I wrote about phenology, but it's about observing the changes over time and how time affects the environment, right? And that could be when the birds arrive, when the spring migration happens, this year, for example, or you can look at plants, when plants are blooming, when their buds are breaking. This year, it feels like we're about 2 weeks ahead of time.
Absolutely.
But year to year, so then we can look at this year and see what's happening, but then we can also look from this time to this time next year. And I think it's a beautiful practice. And it really brings you, I think, closer to the environment. And there's an opportunity I missed the blueberries flowering this year, which you haven't, they're flowering right now, but, But it's never too late to hop into the cycle and see what is happening and observe a change throughout
Absolutely.
The year.
Absolutely. Yeah. Did you, now you just got your definition there, right?
Yeah, let's see. Okay, but it's going to take me some browsing here. So,
well, I can tell you that yes. One thing that Mark and I talked about this, we were talking about this topic a lot this week. So we traveled in April this year and came back to full bloom here
yes.
in Connecticut and Rhode Island. And I went back in my photo album on my phone and I was like, there's no way it was this, you know,
That's
this time.
A good idea.
Yeah. And so like I have pictures in my photos of like the kids standing next to our magnolia tree or whatever.
Sure.
And so just being able, like we are documenting everything right now mm-hmm. and being able to kind of harvest that data. I think it's really cool to go back and be like, oh, see, we are a week earlier this year.
Right.
You know?
Right. Well, that's climate change for you. Okay, yeah. Go ahead.
All right. I'm just going to read. So this is also an interesting fact. Charles François Antoine Marin, he was a 19th century Belgian botanist, and he unlocked the mystery of vanilla flower pollination, which helped unleash its cultivation in the French colonies. So that was his claim to fame. He was an early botanist. He coined the term phenology. The Greek root of that word is phaino, meaning to show or to bring to light. And I love his definition for phenology, which was the manifestation of life ruled by time.
Ooh.
So how life manifests itself across different times.
Absolutely.
So, that's a tuner. That's a tuner
deep.
One
that's
right there.
It's a tuner moment.
Yeah.
There it is.
Right? Listen up, folks. 55 megahertz. I reread the literature, and that's supposed to, like, bring your brain waves into alignment with
nice.
You know,
this show sort of brings my brain waves into alignment.
Good.
Same.
Take a little moment of
like
zen.
I think Thursdays are the days that I like go home and I'm pumped and I'm like, let's spread wildflower seeds mm-hmm. and let's
oh that's great
you know I hurt but I'm gonna rake out this so that I can plant milkweed, which I tried to stratify, and everybody just cross your fingers and hope it worked this time.
Okay, yeah.
Because Gina's going to get sick one day of giving me milkweed seeds.
I got some more if you need. Yeah.
There's a guy in South Kingstown who does a huge planting of milkweed, and then he sells them for like $1 a piece or something, or not even 50 cents, really cheap, just to cover the cost of the materials.
Oh, nice.
But he has a plant sale every year, and he literally raises thousands of them for people to buy and take home and plant for the monarch butterflies.
Nice, that's great.
So, I might need to go visit him because seeds are not working
cool.
for me.
If you go on to the South Kingstown Facebook page, he usually posts on there when the seedlings are ready. What is our next thing? Okay. I want to say one more thing about the migratory bird count.
Mm.
One thing I have noticed personally, and I know everybody has read articles about how many fewer songbirds or birds there are in general in our population. When I used to wake up in the morning at 5 o'clock, and of course always go back to sleep, but you would hear literally almost cacophony mm-hmm. of bird song. And now in the very same location, I don't hear anywhere near the number of birds. Mm-hmm. Like now it's more, instead of being this chorus, this symphony, it's more individual voices. And that to me is a huge change and not a good one. Mm-hmm. And so that's part of the reason why I feel like we want to highlight this migratory bird count, because it's good for people to think about, like, well, why is that happening? What is going on with these populations? Why are we losing all these birds? It's not just because people have cats,
mm-hmm.
right? So,
and it's an opportunity to understand, okay, yeah, I hear birds. How many birds do I hear? What birds do I hear?
Right.
You know, like it's, and then we can tune in and we can say, oh man, there are less birds, you know,
right.
or
what
not.
Do we need to change
yeah.
to bring those bird populations back to the levels that were, you know, more healthier.
Yeah.
And then you have one more thing about your incredible events. And then we're going to talk about why land trusts are so important to support. And that'll give you an opportunity to like go back over some of the things and dates. Right. So you have a tour of a Quaker graveyard.
We do.
Tell me about that.
So this is backed by popular demand. So Larry Hunter, who is the commission of the Rhode Island Historical Cemetery Commission. Did I get it? Yes. it has been leading these tours. He did three last October, and he's going around again this May coming up to Quaker, to Grills Preserve, and to Winnipeg Farm Preserve. So there are over 90 historic cemeteries in Westerly, and wow. some of them happen to be on land trust properties. So he does an awesome job of telling kind of the 101 of cemeteries, of how these very historical landmarks essentially can be maintained properly, and who's buried where, mm-hmm. the history of those people. And here's something interesting that we learned for this tour is that in the late 19th century, early 20th century, it was popular for families to go and have picnics at cemeteries.
Absolutely.
So we're bringing this back. So
almost like the Day of the Dead.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly.
Well, they were the first public parks in a way, if you think about it. No one had built Central Park, and Mount Auburn Cemetery in Boston was the first cemetery that was built for that very purpose.
Amazing.
Not just for burying your dead, but to also enjoy recreationally. And if you have never visited Mount Auburn Cemetery, make a beeline, because honestly, it is one of the most beautiful parks I've ever seen. And the grave art, the monuments, the tombs, and the sculptures on the graves are really extraordinary. Mary Baker Eddy is buried there, and she has an incredible temple. It overlooks a little pond, and they have the biggest stand of Japanese maples of multiple varieties that I have seen anywhere in the world.
Wow.
It is a fantastic resource, and it's totally underutilized, in my opinion.
Mm. Amazing.
It really should be like packed like Central Park is.
Mm. Right. Oh, my gosh.
Anyway, well, I'm sorry to go off
on
that tangent.
No, that's great. Great. It's great to hear. And so we're bringing that back to life. That's probably the bad choice of words. But
not the best thing you've ever put.
I know. Sorry. And so check our website for that series of three tours.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of other things that are coming up this May specifically is our Wellness in the Woods program. We have a partnership with Bar Coast to do yoga on the land, but we're also expanding that to include meditation and outdoor boot camp. So check our website for that. Forest bathing is another thing led by a certified forest bather, Deirdre O'Connor.
Yeah, are you bathing yourself or the forest?
No, actually. So it's kind of like a meditative walk through the forest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can keep all your clothes on.
Okay.
We have a Thursday hiking group that goes out every Thursdays. So check the website for that. I will say that we're coming up into their paddle season, so the hikes transition into Thursday paddles in the summertime.
Sweet.
So dust off your oars and your kayaks and get out with them up there. Our community garden is reopening May 1st, which is Monday, if you can believe that. Is going to be a kickoff. Come on by if you'd like. Meet the gardeners, and all the plots have been filled, but that's on Main Street. So a nice little green spot on Main Street in downtown Westerly.
I think they're doing a plant swap too.
Yes, a plant swap. Exactly. Yeah. Plant swap on. Ooh, so it's Monday, 4 to 6. And also one of our farms on the Barlow Nature Preserve is having their plant sale on May 20th and 21st from 9 to 5 or until the plants sell out. So herbs, seedlings of produce, things like that. And that, again, is 449 Westerly Bradford Road. So that is what we have coming up for May. The summer is packed, and I don't want to, like, rush the summer, but I got to talk about September real quick. I know. So mark your calendars, my friends, because the farm dinner is going to be on September 9th this year. We are thinking that it will be at the Winnipeg Farm Preserve. So last year it was at Avondale Farm Preserve. The farm dinner is 270-ish of your closest friends all sitting at one long table outside, out in the field, to celebrate local agriculture, local chefs, local farmers. Everything is, you know, farm fresh. We pick it up sometimes the day of, and have it prepared right there by local chefs. And it's tasty. It's delicious. It's our largest fundraiser of the year, and it all goes to support Westerly Land Trust conservation efforts. So
That's
mark
fantastic.
Your calendar, September 9th.
Yeah, really, not to be missed.
Not to be missed.
So land trusts, I mean, the amount of content that you bring to the community, I have to say, is really exceptional. And on top of that are the excellent newsletters. Apparently your spring newsletter is on the verge of publication.
Yep, it's almost out. Yep, we're finishing up. So we publish two print copies of a newsletter every year, and hopefully that one will be in your mailboxes soon. Yep.
Yeah. Wonderful. I've so enjoyed the ones that I've read in the past. Yeah.
Good. Yeah.
Well, it's very exciting stuff you guys are doing. I mean, I don't, like you said earlier in the show, not everybody uses their land trust in this way. And I'm so impressed with the guidance, you know, with the enthusiasm and the desire to really bring the whole community together to celebrate the beautiful properties that exist all around Westerly and Southern Rhode Island. It's really, you know,
you know, I think a lot of times, you know, we drive past open spaces and you think, oh, there's not a building there, but you never really consider what actually is there. You think of it as a void and not something that is teeming with life and a place that you can really connect to nature. And I think that's what we want to strive to do, is we know that we have an opportunity and a responsibility to share that land with everybody who lives here, everybody who visits here, and it's for the good of our community, but also, not to be cheesy, the world as on,
absolutely,
you know, on a broader scale,
absolutely. So I mean, everybody should be involved in their local land trusts. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's quite inspiring for me because my local is South Kingstown, and you know, I do stuff to support them. I'm a member.
Right.
When they have their auction every year, I give cooking lessons as part of it. I mean, I don't do it every year, but pandemic kind of put an end to that. But
girl, I don't make dinner every night either.
But you know, it's like these people are working every day to try to make our lives better. I mean, that's what's so inspiring about it, really, is that it's a very altruistic endeavor.
Yep.
And we should all celebrate and appreciate it. And I check out that website. Say what it is again.
Sure. It's westerlylandtrust.org. You can find all of our events that are coming up, all of our properties, trail maps, how to become a member. We could not do any of this without our community support, our corporate sponsors, our foundations, and our people who donate their time, their money, everything. Their enthusiasm is just amazing. We've gained so many new members, so many new volunteers, and it's just really great to have a community endeavor here.
Yeah.
And just so people know, the whole point of having Resiliency Radio, the whole point of having you on the radio, people know our number. People know where we are. If you don't remember what that girl on Thursday was talking about and graveyard picnics, give me a call and let me know. And I've done it for the veterans, like, oh, awesome. Somebody was talking about this or that, and I'm like, oh, I don't know, give me an hour. And I'll find out, and I know westerlylandtrust.org.
Perfect.
Call me, I'll let you know what it was.
Thank all you right. for being here.
Yeah. Well, that's it for us today. Thank you both so much. I'm looking forward to our next exciting iteration.
Same.
You guys are the bomb.
And thank
this
you, Katie.
Great.
Yeah,
thank you so
much
for having us.
It's a joy to have you on. Thanks for tuning in today, folks, and thanks, as always, to our sponsors. Really appreciate the support. See you next week.
Knock, 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 don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got till it's gone? It'd be a paradise.